Tonight, we're discussing the classic 1999 Wachowski sci-fi film, The Matrix, written and directed by Lana and Lily Wachowski.
You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind.
Warner Brothers greenlighted their script after the success of the 1996 neo-noir thriller Bound, starring Jennifer Tilly, Gina Gershon, and Joey Pants, which was a much smaller film budgeted only $6 million. The Matrix, which has continued to be analyzed and often misunderstood, cost $60 million, a big jump for Warner Brothers. An early version of The Matrix would have seen Will Smith as Neo and Val Kilmer, RIP, as Morpheus. Will Smith would end up turning down the role of Neo to be in Wild Wild West. After this casting fell through, Joel Silver of Predator and Who Framed Roger Rabbit fame, as well as The Nice Guys, joined as the producer for The Matrix.
即是我自小跟我爸爸練功，練功跟著我爸爸帶我們入電影圈做舞師，跟著做到三四年之後就做指導了，做指導做到差不多六七年左右就開始做導演了，大概拍片的戲我就不記得了那麼多了，大概應該過去都有最多是二零三部戲左右。
Wachowski were very inspired by the films of John Woo, as you could see throughout the movie, and they hired legendary Hong Kong action choreographer Yuen Wu Ping, who directed The Drunken Master with Jackie Chan and did choreography for so much action cinema, including Jet Li's Fist of Legend and a year after The Matrix, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. The Wachowskis were doing some heady reading at the time, Simulacra and Simulation, which Neo owns in the movie, and Out of Control, The New Biology of Machines, Social Systems, and the Economic World. Lana Wachowski has listed Lewis Carroll, Alice in Wonderland is obviously referenced a lot in the film, William Gibson, Philip K. Dick, Grant Morrison, the films of Sam Peckinpah, the Bible, Eastern religious texts, and Greek mythology as further inspirations. So it's pretty clear why people of all political and ideological stripes have latched onto ideas from The Matrix. They cast Lawrence Fishburne as Morpheus and Keanu Reeves as Neo, Carrie-Anne Moss, Joey Pants, Hugo Weaving, because you just legally have to if you're shooting in Australia or New Zealand, Marcus Chong, and Gloria Foster as the Oracle.
I imagine that right now you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole.
Neo is a software engineer by day, hacker by night, who's chasing down the mysterious Morpheus. When Morpheus finds him, he explains that he thinks Neo is the one, and shows him that the Matrix is a simulated reality created by machines after humans tried to destroy artificial intelligence and ended up darkening and destroying the Earth. All designed so humans could basically be used as batteries by these machines. Neo is thrown into a universe where being free is life on the run on a spaceship. pursued by their own artificially intelligent creations and marked for destruction.
The Matrix is a computer-generated dream world, built to keep us under control.
Morpheus's liberated people living on the Nebuchadnezzar must continually return to the Matrix, trying to slowly liberate more and more of humanity without being turned over by the people they're trying to liberate, who aren't ready to accept the truth, or hunted down by agents collaborating with the machines such as Hugo Weaving's Agent Smith.
A virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague.
The Matrix was hailed for its groundbreaking special effects, including bullet time, where heightened perception allows a character to react in slow motion while the camera moves at regular speed, as well as some pretty intense ripple effects using a combination of practical and computerized effects. The Matrix would go on to win Best Visual Effects, Best Editing, Best Sound, and Best Sound Editing at the 2000 Oscars. From a budget of $63 million, it made $467 million at the box office.
You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland.
Before I introduce the panel, please like this video and subscribe to the Movie Night Extravaganza YouTube channel. Then hit that bell to get notified whenever we're streaming. Super chats are now open. If you have any pressing questions, send us a super chat, which helps me maintain the expenses for the show, which I'm obligated by the rules of the Geneva Convention to stop everything and ask the panel. Another way to help us out is to become a patron and give us money every month. In exchange, you get access to all of our after parties, bonus content, and we'll tell you even more movies we watched recently. Patreon.com/Movie Night Extra. We have a Movie Night Extravaganza Discord. There's an invite link in the episode description, and we have a Letterboxd HQ account. So those are two more places to follow along with us. Okay, let me introduce the illustrious panel. Christina Oakes is a co-host of Movie Night Extravaganza and a Twitch streamer. You can find her streaming at twitch.tv/cosmopolitics. All of her social media accounts are also at Cosmopolitics. She's on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky, and even occasionally on Letterboxd. Ravana is a lawyer, co-host of the Taking the L Pod, Twitch partner, and a former contributor for TYT. I, of course, am not the one, Trinity. God damn it, Trinity. I'm not the one. And your host, Forrest Miller. I would have taken both pills. What's Morpheus gonna do? Conan is currently on tour, but his album, The Way of the Neutron, was just released on Bandcamp. You should go to neutronfriends.bandcamp.com and order it today.
Yeah.
What up, Ravana? We are in the Matrix. We have been disconnected. We are no longer. Look, we're woke, all right? We know that Grok is the one that did the Matrix. You know what I mean? Like, we know that Elon set up Grok. Just, you know, and we are ready to take down Grok tonight on Movie Night Extravaganza.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I'm keeping these on. I don't care.
I feel like I'm blind in these.
Yeah, I couldn't see anything.
I could see a lot. Well, my ring light's very bright, I think, so it's like, whoa.
But how's it been going?
Good. I was really happy that it was this movie because I haven't had an opportunity to watch it since it was or just hadn't had the idea to watch it, I guess is a more accurate way to say it. Since the last time I saw it, which was 100% on Spike TV. Anyone remember that? That channel.
Yeah. Oh my god.
It was that, and it was A Thousand Ways to Die. They had on all the time. Yeah.
That the Lord of the Rings, sometimes they would play on there. But and I watched all three movies in parts, just walked into the living room when my mom was watching it and stood around and watched like 20, 30 minutes at a time until eventually I had seen the entirety of all three films. But it's nice to actually go back and rewatch the first one because it has been a good number of years since I'd seen it. And, you know, try to understand what the hell right-wingers think that they are, what they see in the movie, how they think that it speaks to them.
It's really just red and blue. Like, it really is just the,
right.
Oh, there's a red pill. Because every single one of them, you know, they're like, oh, I'll take the red pill. But they just mean, like, I'll be a Republican. I feel like,
yeah.
I feel like it's that simple.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Christina, when do you first see The Matrix?
I remember seeing like commercials for The Matrix when it was like out when I was really young. And so when it was available like to rent, I watched it. And I was like, I was very young, very confused. And I was like, Keanu, though.
Yeah, my mom was getting her master's in graphic design when it came out. And she reminded me like the other night that she was the one that actually first showed me The Matrix, because her whole class had watched it, because they were like, look at this crazy graphic design work that they've done throughout this movie. And they were way more focused on that, I think, than the point of the movie. But yeah, so I first saw it when I was like really young. And then these are my official Matrix glasses that me and my brother used to run around in to, you know, jump into the Matrix.
Yeah.
Hit some of that time moves.
Yeah.
and then your mom was like, don't take pills, please.
My mom's first thing was, oh no, the red pill and the blue pill. Don't take pills. Don't do that.
I don't think that's the point of the movie, but it's not about, I mean.
No, it is. It's actually a cautionary tale about taking pills from strangers.
Yeah. Well, I mean it's actually, not like drug addiction in general, but it's like, yeah.
It's co-written by Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Part like, of the war on drugs. He's like, if you take pills, this is what's gonna happen to you. They'll give you the first one free. You can pick between the red one and the blue one.
It reminds me of like when you get like party drug testers, and if it's like red is pure, if it's blue is not, or whatever, vice versa. And so it kind of reminded me of like that whole thing too. I was like, oh,
now I yeah. The ones I get are test strips, and they like I think it's pink if it's good or whatever, and they're kind of like COVID test strips. I remember buying them online to go to a rave, and I was like, these are literally like the same as COVID test strips.
Like literally, but my psychology teacher in school was like, if you want to do party drugs, you got to get testers, okay?
I always thought party drugs was a funny term, because all drugs are party drugs if you take them at a party. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I'm actually wearing a leather jacket, like, big coat.
But today. Yeah, I wanted to, but then I didn't have a good enough duster, you know, like the Mac style duster. I agree, I feel like, you know, watching this movie, like, I agree with you, Ravana, like watching this as like an adult that has like left wing politics or whatever is so much of a different experience, like how much you pick up on them obviously watching this kid.
Yeah, actually shout out to Carlos Wild Ride on Twitch, who's actually going over a deep dive right now on stream about been doing a couple of streams about how there's a trans allegory.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of, even just plus the
symbolism,
like
symbolism and
every choice. Like, I noticed this so much, like rewatching it, because I rewatched it like twice for this, and every choice is like a binary, which is the computer thing too, right? Like, so 10001. But every time he gets a choice, it's this or that, which can also be a trans allegory. I mean, you know, like you can either go down the trans rabbit hole and, you know, like start to really realize who you are, or you could just kind of stay in one place, and that binary choice, I can definitely see that being an allegory.
Yeah. I feel like watching the movie again, I had never recognized how many moments there are where Neo is faced with a choice. I mean, of course, I wasn't watching with any sort of critical lens before. I was just like, oh, this is a cool action movie, and they're doing
parodied a lot too.
Kung Fu, and it's awesome. But this time, you know, really watching it, I noticed, you know, right at the beginning, there's moments where it's like when he goes to the party, they provide him a choice to go or to not go, and he has to make a choice there. And then when he's at work, his boss says something along the lines of, you know, you can be the guy who sleeps in and doesn't show up for work, or you and not have a job and work somewhere else, or you can be here, be on time, and be productive for this company. And then obviously later on, the blue pill or the red pill, and then whether or not he's the one. There's just so many moments where, you know, he has to make all, you know, these decisions. Of course, it seems, you know, like an obvious sort of insight. Of course, every part of our lives is influenced by those pivotal moments, those decisions that we make, but they really did build up that and foreshadow that in the movie.
Yeah.
They're almost like
choose wisely.
They're like prepping him, or almost like, I hate the word grooming, but like, you know, like throughout the beginning of it, right? Like they're readying him to have to make that choice. Mm-hmm. And it's like throughout the very beginning, like the first 20 minutes of it, they're like either this or this. But it's also like, it feels like the binary computer thing where it's like, you know, it's like a zero or a one, or it's like, you know, everything kind of amounts to a choice. It's almost like an RPG game or something, right? Where like you mm-hmm. only get a certain number of choices. And then that plays into the larger question of like control versus fate versus, you know, whether you have free choice in this world at all. So he goes through the whole thing being like, well, I want to control my own life. And it's like ironic because obviously he doesn't know that he's in a simulation where he really doesn't. But like, even when he breaks free, he really doesn't. And you have to ask yourself about, you know, free will, I guess. It's the free will versus fate debate that kind of philosophers love to talk on at length. And they will for hours if you start talking to them.
It's so annoying. But what about a secret third thing, you know?
I would have been like, is there a third thing that I could do? Which there is. I mean, you know, the quiz, because he says you have to either sacrifice yourself for Morpheus, like that, you know, the finale moment is like, you have to either sacrifice yourself for Morpheus or you have to let Morpheus die. And he does choose the third thing. He's like, I'm going to save Morpheus. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
He's like, actually, oh, it's impossible. I am going to die momentarily. But
yeah, I feel like that's like, you know, and then it's like, all of the things that the oracle tells you, because obviously like when there is some kind of oracle or there is some kind of religion, right, like you're, it's almost predestined because you're making your choices within the framework of whatever you think that is. So when the oracle is like, you know, the oracle is like, oh, you have to do this or this, like you kind of just assume that's the truth. Even if you don't believe in the oracle, you kind of assume like, well, I was given the choice between these two things. And then you're almost like in a control framework, like you can no longer break out of it because you're making all of your choices based on something you assume is predestined.
Mm-hmm. I would say a lot of details that I caught this time that I didn't, again, watching standing in the living room in high school over my mom's shoulder, but like the little details about the oracle over her apartment, there's a sign, or it's in the kitchen, I think, that says, know thyself, which is also over the cave where the oracle lives in Greek mythology. The oracle in Greek mythology is a bearded blind person, is usually depicted that way, who's waiting outside the door, nods to Neo, but a blind bearded man sort of standing guard. Just all these little details where
they made the oracle woke.
Yeah.
They do it for every movie if there's an oracle now.
They did the thing that I thought, like, because I hadn't seen it in so long, because it is the blind oracle. When Neo walks in, she's like, I knew it was you, and she turns around, but her eyes are fine, and it's like, well, that's not as impressive as if you were a blind person and you were like, I knew it was you.
Or was it an oracle character who's like supposed to be like a certain like specific like race, and they make them like white for some reason. Like in like a lot of comic books and stuff like that. And it's like, really? Like, come on now.
I think that's the cave thing though. The oracle lives in the cave and like it literally doesn't get any sunlight.
Yeah.
That, I don't know. There was like a really annoying Amazon Prime note on the side that's like, actually, this is written in Latin and it's supposed to be in Greek. And it was like, I hate Amazon
Prime. Like, we don't need, like, if we need this, we could look at the, did you know errors on IMDb? Okay, we could do that instead.
I would say there's a phenomenal thing that I saw this time watching, right? Just as we're talking about the Oracle, when Morpheus and Neo, I was also accidentally referring to him as Morbius all day today in my head. And I was like, well, that's a totally different, significantly worse movie. Let me.
Morbius? I heard that was a masterpiece. Tony's best yet.
But as
that would be,
for the doorknob to enter the room to film that, they put the camera in plain sight. You can see the lens of the camera in the reflection on the doorknob. They just covered it with a jacket that was also black. It was just like one of those things where if you're not looking carefully, you're never going to notice it. They like draped a tie over it to continue Morpheus's tie. And it was just so cool because it's one of those things where it's like, you got to do what you got to do to get the shot. Mm-hmm. And it was hidden enough that unless you're watching to discuss the film, you know, critically, you probably would never notice it. But it's just that level of like, you know, we can make something really cool without having to, you know, with making it with practical effects as opposed to, you know, trying to get the shot by.
There's a lot of continuity issues with this movie too. I'm looking at it and it's like 50 plus four, like what? Like it's crazy.
Well, it's only like, it's crazy, but you know, the movie before this, Bound, that the Wachowskis made, which I was watching a little, like I was watching a little bit of it earlier, which I think I've seen it before, but it's like, all right, well, if you didn't know that they were going to end up being trans, like, come on, like in the first 10 minutes, it's like, mm-hmm. But like I even like in that movie, right? Like Warner Brothers only gave them $6 million to make that, which is, you know, it's like indie movie budget almost. And yeah. For this, it's only 60 million. So it's not like the budget of it. I mean, and you know, maybe that's a lot, that's a fair amount of, but this is like around the same time as like Titanic, right? Like so yeah. 60 million is not that much money to make something as cool as this.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting too. I've like looking through the, like, you know, trivia, the opening action sequence took 6 months of training and 4 days to shoot.
Yeah.
Think about all the prep that they had to do before actually filming this movie, which is incredible, especially since the action and how it's shot is so timeless. It did in Charlie's Angels. It's been spoofed a lot, like in the scary movie films, like
Shrek.
Yes, Shrek.
Fiona is fighting the bandits.
Yes.
So this is some of the training. This is probably going to get us flagged, but this is from the making of The Matrix. This is some of the training that they're doing. And it's with, like, as I put in the intro, it's with, you know, like a guy who literally directed Drunken Master with Jackie Chan. Like, he's seeped in the whole world of, and then did all of the action choreography for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon in 2000.
Yeah, I love that movie.
These aren't athletes, they're actors. You know, when you want someone to paint your house, you hire a painter, not an actor who makes believe he's a painter. They really had to learn a fighting style that they never had learned before. It was a tremendous hardship, but it is evident on the film when you see it that's Lawrence and that's Carrie Ann and that is Keanu in those scenes doing that stuff, and it's astounding.
We started training in October of 97. Trained all the way through till March of 98. That was on like an everyday basis.
1, 2, 3. Ready,
play. It was a very involving, exhausting process, which I initially thought we were going to be doing Kung Fu for maybe 4 or 5 weeks, something like that. It ended up being months and months of training.
希望可以, the interesting thing is in the challenge, and the challenge is how we can make these people look as though they know they are born with the skills.
We all sort of have our own person that is sort of our teacher, and my teacher's name is Ma Dai. He really held my hand in the beginning and was very hard on me at the same time. Chu is Keanu's main guy, and Chu doesn't speak any English. Then we have Dion, who oversees all of us, and he speaks better English than the rest of the guys. And he sort of our go-between, Wo Ping and us.
We've had various movie kung fu dojos in Los Angeles and in Australia, and at lunch we'd sit there with our legs, you know, trying to open the rusty gates and stretch and watch kung fu movies and see what was good and bad.
I really didn't know if I would be able to do what they were asking me to do. I was going every day and getting on the wires and being lifted up just to get the feeling of being lifted up on the wire, and then, you know, practicing sort of getting up the wall and then having the wall padded and then going along the padded wall and then them taking the pad off and me being terrified. Like, I couldn't do the wire that day, the day they took the pads off the wall, because I was so afraid.
He's very inventive and organic, the way he works, and you know, you must have your own style, but you also have to have, you know, and good kung fu.
Initially, I think Wu Ping and the Wa team, they took us on and thought we were useless, which we were, hopeless at kung fu. And they slowly realized after a couple of weeks that maybe we were going to be able to get to a level where we'd be halfway decent.
It was really intense, but it was a lot of fun. And again, it's the kind of thing that you very rarely get an opportunity to do something like this. I mean, I feel incredibly blessed to have worked with Wu Peng and his team.
Okay, so what do you need?
You know, fun fact. So, did you see the neck brace on Keanu? He suffered like a 2-level fusion in his spine. And so, if you notice in the movie, he doesn't kick a lot because his legs were like paralyzed too. Like it affected almost his whole body. So, he had to get surgery. It was in recovery. And he still wanted to keep going, keep training. But they're like, take it easy. What we'll do is we'll rework your fighting. But it's
really, like, bro, you're not in a simulation. Like, this is gonna fuck you up.
Real life. Right. but it goes to show that, you know, fighting is choreography. You have to figure out a way to show everyone, you know, lots of training, their strengths, there's weaknesses. There's things you can do, not do, and know what your limits are and whatnot. So I like that clip because it shows, you know, how, you know, it's like dancing. You know, you gotta train, you gotta practice. And then the final, you know, the competition or like the final, you know, project, which is on film, it has to be, you know, as flawless. I mean, there are special effects, there's wiring and whatnot, but a lot of that is them actually doing the work.
Yeah, that's what they were kind of making fun of. I mean, Tarantino really did not handle this well, but in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where he has Brad Pitt's Cliff Major, like that character fight Bruce Lee and he kicks Bruce Lee's ass or whatever. That's kind of what they're making fun of, the whole idea that this is kind of more choreography like dance than it is, you know, than it is like fighting, which I don't, I think with Bruce Lee, like Bruce Lee could have fucking fucked up pretty much anybody, but it's like for a lot of like for something like this, right? Like, yeah, it has a lot more in common, I think, with dancing than it has with the actual style of martial arts. And that's why it's the choreography.
Yeah. And I mean, you have to have so much trust and your scene partners when you're filming this, because you can seriously hurt yourself or them if, like, you do anything wrong. I mean, and she was just talking about how terrified she was to go up the wall for the first time without the padding on it. Cause I mean, if you're not executing the move nearly perfectly, you could result, it could result in a severe injury. And then as an actor, that's not just going to prevent you from fulfilling your obligations for this movie, but movies down the line as well.
Yeah.
And it's like everybody in this movie is like at the top of their game. Like Keanu Reeves is getting like roles every single year. Like Lawrence Fishburne's getting roles. I mean, nonstop. Yeah. Like pretty much everybody in this movie, it would have fucked them up. I feel like, like if Hugo Weaving, I guess Hugo Weaving did get like a spine injury too or something, and he had to get surgery in the middle of it eventually. Yeah. But like, you know, he wouldn't have been available like for like Lord of the Rings like 2 years later if he was fucked up that much. Like,
You know what's interesting too with like Carrie Ann Moss, obviously, like a lot recently she talked about where she's been, and she's like, you know, a lot of people were offering me like these types of roles. I was being, you know, people were offering me like typecast as this character from The Matrix and like sexy actions like characters, but she basically left Hollywood for motherhood. I mean, she did some stuff here and there, but like a lot of people were like, whatever happened to Carrie Ann Moss? She was The Matrix is her most popular role to date, I think.
There are worse things to be typecast as, though. Like, they're like, yo, you're going to be this badass woman that shows up and starts kicking ass and you fall in love. How about that? And it's like, well, I don't
know. Can we not have the fall in love part, though? Like,
I don't know. I feel like she's great. And everybody in this is really great. Like, everybody's kind of feels like actor. Like, it's really actors at the top of their game. Lawrence Fishburne really like absolutely kills it throughout this because Morpheus is such a strange character in some ways, I feel like.
Yeah, it's so crazy to see like Lawrence, you know, his career, because I think the first movie I ever saw him was Ike Turner and What's Love Got to Do with It, and I'm like, oh, but you know, the range, because he was also on Blackish as the grandfather. Like, he looks the same. He's just gained a few pounds. Like, it's amazing how cool he is.
Yeah. He's been in so much stuff. Yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street 3. I'm just looking at it. Yeah, he's been
I forgot about that one. Yeah. And Dream Warriors. Yeah, that one. And yeah, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that has to have his own Wikipedia page just to, like, look at how many movies he's been in.
Yep.
Yeah, like Rumblefish, Boys in the Hood. He's been in some crazy
oh,
movies.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was in Rumblefish. Love that movie.
Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice.
He was in
Megalobolis, apparently.
Yes, he was.
I still haven't seen it. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because Rumblefish is also Coppola. So he's done, like, a few Coppola movies in the past. So.
Yeah. Yeah, this list is crazy.
Yeah, but I also I feel like people like Keanu and Lawrence Fishburne, their town is not as, like, I mean, they're cultural icons, obviously, especially with this movie. Like, you know, everyone knows who Keanu Reeves is. You know, he's like the internet's, like, you know, dad, you know, the girls love him, find him hot. Lawrence Shinar met him, I believe, right? I think. Yeah. And so it's like they're like this is The Matrix is like a popcorn movie, like, obviously, like a big blockbuster hit. Like, did it get nominated for many, like, awards? Because I feel like, you know, like, actors like Keanu and Lawrence Fishburne are just, like, actors that are almost underrated in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, so it swept all of the technical ones. So yeah. It swept, like, special effects, visual effects, sound editing, like, you know, so it swept all of those at the 2000 Oscars. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I forgot that I was like, I feel like he was in Lawrence Fishburne, but his name was Larry Fishburne back then.
Yeah,
but he was in Apocalypse Now. He was one of the guys on the he's really young in that, though.
Yeah.
I remember talking about that when I talked about Apocalypse Now on, like, Ben's show, and I was like, it's Lawrence Fishburne, he's even in this.
Yeah. Like, that's the movie Lawrence Fishburne was not in.
I think the last movie I watched with Keanu Reeves in it was Point Break. And I watched it with no sound because it was playing on the TV at the bar and we had the subtitles. And that's the only way I've ever seen that movie. At some point, should watch it.
Point Break is great.
I love that movie, not because of how hot Patrick Swayze's in it, but whatever.
I double featured just because of, like, show, like, podcasting stuff. I was on KT's show. And I watched Point Break for that. And then the same time I watched Bram Stoker's Dracula. No. So I was like, Keanu. So I pretty much I double featured that Keanu, mainlined Keanu going Budapest.
Oh yeah, he was in The Color Purple too. Wow, damn.
Yeah, he was in so much stuff. I feel like every black actor from that time was in The Color Purple though. I look at like anybody's name and it's like The Color Purple and it's like, oh yeah, that's...
Yeah. I have been
thinking they were eating off that
since the intro, because I didn't know this, that Will Smith was originally supposed to play Neo
and he did the Wild Wild West.
I can't picture him in this movie. I mean, at the time, sure, it would have been it very much in keeping with the kinds of movies he was making, but
the Wild Wild West,
maybe that's great because I saw this movie when I was young and obviously Keanu Reeves is the face of The Matrix, but yeah, I mean, it's just really difficult to imagine how the movie would have played out with him.
I do remember this though. There was a music video he did where he was like confronted his biggest career regret. Not playing Neo in The Matrix. Like,
good for him.
I think it's funny that they would have race swapped Neo and Morpheus, because he would have been Neo and then Val Kilmer would have been Morpheus, R.I.P. And that would have been like the funniest pair up. I feel like it works better with like Lawrence Fishburne as Morpheus and then Keanu Reeves as, but each of those actors I feel like is good as like kind of a blank slate almost, where it's like like they have to be shown into this world and it's like, yeah, like they seem like they have some of it together, but it's like they're kind of a blank slate you can project, you know, this truth onto.
Yeah, shout out to Val Kilmer for being in the one Batman movie with the best original song.
Baby. Yeah, he apparently Lawrence Fishburne was in Free Ray Sean. That's a show about Ray Vaughn's life.
He was really funny in Blackish, though. For those who were like considering binge watch, I'm like, that show's so funny because of him and Jennifer Lewis, who was Tina Turner's ma, and What's Love Got to Do with It. But he played Ike, the son-in-law. But they're a couple in, well, it's complicated in Blackish, and they're so funny because they're both very like they've done like a lot of comedic roles and stuff like that. But I love when Lawrence Fishburne does something very serious, because it shows that he definitely has range. And you know, talking about his career, it's like, yeah, he's done a lot of, you know, Coppola movies. Like that, you know, Apocalypse Now was his debut, right? I think it was.
Close to it, yeah.
Yeah.
He probably did some TV. His debut, I guess, is Cornbread Earl and Me, and then Fast Break. But yeah, it's like, he's literally, like, that's his, I think, as, like, a character with a name and, like, a real part in the movie. I think that's, like, his debut, yeah. Because the other ones are, like, Street Kid.
Like, hopefully by 99, people forgot about Keanu's accent in Bram Stoker's Dracula, so.
I will say one thing that I really like about The Matrix, and as a huge fan of anime from the 90s, is how much inspiration it draws from anime, particularly not even, you know, the sequences, the way that the fights play out. But this movie specifically, there's a wonderful anime manga called The Ghost in the Shell. It was turned into a film called Ghost in the Shell.
With it came Scarlett out in 1995.
Johansson as that's the one that Scarlett Johansson's like, I'm Japanese.
I'm Asian.
Oh, the live action one? I'm not talking about the live action version of that.
But I'm just saying, like, that's how we know it from.
The 1995 anime movie is phenomenal. I would recommend everyone go watch it, but it's the premise of the manga of the anime is somewhat similar. It's in a futuristic world where humans are modified and enhanced by technology and AI, and you have the main character is leading a resistance movement, fighting against it. There's a Morpheus character called the Puppet Master, who's leading that resistance movement and trying to wake people up and fighting against the oppressive AI technology. And some of the scenes, I mean, it pretty much exactly mirror how the fights played out in the anime, especially towards the end of the film, when they're in, what is it? Is it a bank? They're running through there. That's almost exactly like the scenes in the anime. So I highly recommend anybody watch that if they want to get some insight into where they drew inspiration from. They actually, when they were pitching this movie, they played that anime for the people at the studios to get them an idea of what they were working from.
Yeah,
to show that this
it's slightly older. I mean, only by a few years, but Akira.
Yeah,
other one
too.
That they were really like down with. Which I mean, I totally get that. Like you know, like the effects and that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was Ghost in the Shell. They actually showed the video, like the thing of, I don't know, the guy, the way that the producer guy talks about it, which that guy is, I don't like that guy because he's been in like multiple documentaries about the making of stuff, like Joel Silver or whatever. But he was like, they played some Japanese cartoons for me, and then that's where I got the idea from. And it's like, come on, man. Like, but no. Yeah, it's that, and it's like Akira with you know, like the crazy like blending kind of things where it's like human turning into machine turning into something else, like and then like obviously like the cyberpunk world building of the entire thing, both of them. I mean, you know, like it's like that cyberpunk trend in like Japanese manga, and then also Japanese like animated film that they really like latched onto, and you could see them like make that come to life in here. And I think the Wachowskis were also comic book artists, and like they ended up actually taking each picture they wanted and doing like these really detailed, like beautiful storyboards for the entire film.
I will say, if anyone is unfamiliar with Akira, you have definitely heard one scene of it where there's this the sound of a bell tolling, and then he goes, "Leave me alone."
Yeah,
yeah. That sound is all over TikTok. Yeah.
The other thing, because we covered Akira a few months ago, and we like talked about it for like a couple hours. It was like me, Conan, and Katie. I don't know where Christina was at this point. But we watched the there's like a this really, really long like compilation of every time they've done the Akira motorcycle, like the motorcycle thing. So we watched it, and it was like some crazy, it was like Adventure Time, and it was like, all right, like you're really getting some crazy territory here. The motorcycle slide. I feel like, you know, they even had like Nope. They did the Akira slide in Nope with Jordan Peele did it, and he's like, yeah, I did an Akira slide in real life. I had that happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy though. It's crazy to see like it's both like the Hong Kong action films like John Woo and stuff like that that they're kind of like latching onto, and like Japanese manga and stuff. Like it's crazy to see like they meet in within the Matrix, and it's like I didn't even know at the time that they had like that crazy choreographer doing their stuff who would go on to do Crouching Tiger, like, you know, like that movie, like a year later, like Crouching Tiger, Leaping Dragon, like a year later, literally that movie would come out, and that guy was also doing assumably they're like overlapping, like he was also doing the choreography for that.
Mm-hmm.
It still drives. Oh, you go right back.
I was just gonna say, even in, and you can see it in the background for the stream. The code that they wrote is a mix of numbers and, sorry, my doorbell's ringing. Vociferously. And kana, Japanese katakana letters that are inverted. And if you go through those and flip them, they're actually sushi recipes. Because
yeah,
he made it. He took sushi recipes from his wife's cookbook and just chopped them up and reversed them and integrated them in with the numbers. But if you look really closely, it's beautiful redheads and blondes and brunettes.
Wired did like a couple years ago. They did a which of course everything now has an ad wall in front of it, but. They did a whole investigation into what sushi recipes are within the code.
That's the type of content I like, and I don't eat sushi.
Because I guess the Wachowskis wouldn't tell anybody. Everyone's asked, and they're like, it's sushi recipes, but we're not going to tell you what one. It's just California rolls over and over again.
But, I feel like with the, the growing like the internet, I feel like this movie has definitely been distorted by right wingers, and I just don't understand why and how. Like, and they even think that the sisters have like a Republican conservative politics, and I'm like, have you not seen the Ivanka Trump tweet? Like,
I think one of the things is that they're so eclectic about. You know, they take things from the Bible. They take things from Eastern philosophy. They take things from, you know, Japanese action movies. They take things from Sam Peckinpah's, like, incredibly violent Western movies. They take things from, like, Eastern religion. They take things from so many different places that I feel like it's actually pretty easy to project your own, whatever your ideology is, right? Like, to project your own thing and be like, that's like me finding out that this thing is actually this thing. And then my mind was like blown, and it's almost like they're giving me the red pill. So in that sense, I kind of get it, because you can read whatever you want. I mean, you know, it's like the classic kind of savior story. And I think that the right has like latched onto that as a specific mode of storytelling, because it's like, it's just like Jesus in the Bible, or like, it's just like, you know, John Wayne, you know, saving the town, or like, it's like the hero's journey that they've kind of latched onto as a mode of storytelling.
Yeah, but they're not heroes at all, period. They're not even the hero of their own stories. They gotta look up the
Yeah, but I think that I think when it comes to like right wing politics, right? Like, it's just a mode of storytelling that they like to express, I guess, right? Like the hero on horseback kind of thing.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that
Yeah, yeah, they're the very definition of, like, we need media literacy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because that's exactly what it is, right? It's a lack of media literacy on their part, where they know that, and it's very obvious that there are, they draw a lot from the Bible here, and the hero's journey is, you know, the journey of Jesus, and Neo is the Jesus character in
yeah,
films. But it's the idea that they're viewing those biblical references as, you know, sacred text versus how it's intended to be viewed as a form of media. They are just drawing from a form of media and not, like, actually prescribing Christianity through the movies.
And it's also funny because, you know, like, if right-wingers met the real, like, you know, if Jesus came back and was like, I'm Jesus, and, like, was saying the same, like, they'd lynch him. Like, that guy would get lynched.
Also, too, they would be like, wait a minute, you're not blonde hair and blue-eyed and gorgeous? What the hell?
No, he would be a Palestinian man.
Yeah.
You know, that's coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd be a Palestinian Jew that's coming back, and he's like, we got to love everyone, and we got to share amongst each other equally, and I kind of hate bankers. And they would be like, all right, we're going to lynch this dude. We're going to drone strike.
When you said bankers, we thought you meant...
We thought you meant bank, like, you know.
Bankers. We didn't think that you meant capitalism.
We thought you meant the ones in New York with the money that, you know, they're rubbing their hands together. Right. You meant like me?
We thought you meant the guys at Green Guns Bank in Harry Potter. All right.
But, like, I do think it's, I mean, there's also a kind of, and I think that this is true for 90s culture in general. There's a weird kind of anarcho, not capitalist, but like anarcho libertarian streak to a lot of stuff when it comes to, like, you know, talking about, like, control and this kind of freeing your mind from stuff, and, like, the way the individualism, I guess, of a lot of 90s culture. I think a lot of it is very libertarian coded. I mean, the tech space, right, like, itself is very libertarian coded, and, like, I don't necessarily think that it's ever intended to be that way, but I just think it's kind of like a spirit of the age thing. It's like, you could free yourself through technology rather than collective politics.
Yeah. It's like, my phone, I can free myself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think that the ideas of, like, the early internet are a lot, I mean, they're better than what the internet's become, right? Like, a lot of it is about freeing yourself from these constraints that we put on society, and you can actually change society through technology, and you can use technology to amplify yourself, and it's going to be, like, this new information age. But I do think that those ideas are very easily folded into, like, a libertarianism that is a libertarianism of, like, the rank and file rather than libertarianism of, like, the top. It's like, we just love corporations.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you can use AI to, like, detect cancer earlier, not bastardized David Lynch films. I saw a post about that. I'm like, you know what? And I kind of, you know, asterisk what I want, what, you know, because you never know. And I'm like, I hope David Lynch haunts you when you, and he gets, forces you to, anyway.
Or, I mean, even, like, all of the people using, killing the rainforest to make their pictures into Studio Ghibli style.
Yeah.
Despite the stated intentions of the creator of the studio.
You're like, we're making art. Yeah. No, you're not. You're lazy.
Miyazaki was very clear.
Right.
Saying, like, literally, like, I want no part of AI whatsoever. I think this is an abomination that's going to destroy humanity.
I mean, and like, Hollywood went on strike for it, right? And yet a lot of Hollywood studios, like, we're going to be using AI now. And I'm like, what?
But like, it's even someone sad, like Elon, that has, like, has an intense savior complex, right? Like, he thinks that he's either going to be the one to save or destroy humanity. He was going around for the longest time warning about AI, being like, oh, AI, it's going to destroy us all. And then he's like, I just made my own AI that's different than the other AI.
It's like,
yeah, like, the embrace of AI as a way to, like, either kind of art your way into a tech utopia, or to get literally confirmation bias through something that's, you know, giving you information that you already want to hear. Like, just that aspect of it. Like, it's very funny to see, like, the right, who you think would, I mean, for the longest time, like, there were people on the right who have been like, you know, artificial intelligence is one of the biggest threats that we face. Being like, well, we kind of like it. We like making art out of it, as long as we cheat artists out of their money.
Yeah, and it reminds me of, like, I Show Speed is in, like, Japan or China, somewhere.
China.
Like, yeah, China. And he's, like, literally in flying cars. And I'm like, that's the technology we should be going towards, but like, we don't really focus on actual work in America. We focus on, you know, cheating her way through and being as lazy and sloppy as possible without getting, you know, and just cutting through and making shortcuts. And that's what AI has done. And this movie can really, you know, pinpoint that, you know, this movie also kind of makes you like realize like, oh shit, the future is kind of scary.
Like, I would say AI has become pretty pervasive in my field, my career field now, in the legal field. Pretty much every major case searching website, the databases LexisNexis or Westlaw or Bloomberg, all have their own version, their own AI model that they use, that they sell to their attorneys, that whose firms subscribe to their products. And a lot of lawyers have started using it or using it, and those are like closed universe sort of LLMs, right? Because they only pull from the case databases, but a lot of attorneys don't want to pay for those programs, which I have my own qualms with those programs themselves, but they'll just use something like ChatGPT, which will invent cases. They will invent completely fake cases.
Yeah.
That
hallucinations.
That'll help just solve the case or something?
They are not law citing to actual legal sources. They are just inventing case law, and attorneys are going to court and presenting arguments based on this completely fake case, and getting called out by judges. But I mean, not every attorney, and most attorneys are not litigators. So how many attorneys are writing things that are just never caught because they're not presented in front of a judge, where they're just relying on this? And also,
it's like a hobby,
breaching client attorney-client privilege by entering in details of their clients into something like ChatGPT, that unlike these sort of closed universe databases that delete that information immediately, ChatGPT learns from the information that you put into it. So now they know that, you know, whatever client you have violated this or that statute, whatever it may be, that they have some personal information about that individual and the specific facts of their case. And it's really concerning. And I mean, there's this idea that eventually the people won't need lawyers, because then I think that we are, you know,
dog, my lawyers, AI, I'm going to jail.
I mean, there's some parts of the job that I think that AI could never take over. But I mean, it's being integrated really quickly and in a very messy fashion. And I think it's doing a lot of damage, which personally, I think it's bad. Obviously, it's not best practices. But I'm also, on the other hand, glad to see it poorly integrated into the field and hopefully see it become a banned in some respect, because of the danger that it poses. And also because I want to see these large legal databases get completely screwed out of their money that they've invested millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into developing their own AI models, just have to get rid of them because they have become illegal. That would be amazing, because those databases.
Yeah, well, it's been a problem with LLMs and all kinds of, because they're trying to integrate it also into the medical field. They're trying to integrate it into teaching, like all of these different places. And the problem with it is that, like,
I had to do my own research for my research papers. Okay, no cards.
But they have a thing where you ask it a question, and because it's only designed for this one thing, right? And it's like designed as if it is like this form of like intelligence. Like, it kind of panics and it starts hallucinating. Yeah. So like, you hit a dead end, and instead of like, it's like, oh, I can't find anything about that, I'm just gonna invent it. And that's where those you know, the things where they're inventing fake cases comes from. It's like, we've literally created AI with anxiety. It's like, I can't. I have no answer to this. Let me just and then it just starts. Yeah.
And I think professors do have like an AI detector. Like, they have to keep updating it because, you know, sometimes AI can be smart, but like, it's getting to the point where, you know, a lot of like, you know, professors and intellectuals and even like people within the medical field are like, oh my God, you cannot. You cannot just go through medical school half-assing it. Like, you cannot. Like, it's getting to the point where we're just becoming even, like, I feel like millennials were the last generation to actually use tools necessary to get through and actually succeed in schooling and all that, or like, you know, careers. But nowadays, it's like, oh, I can just, you know, ChatGPT an essay and blah, blah, blah. No, 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 you can't, because you don't end up learning anything. Like, part of the reason why you're doing what you're doing is that you're also learning along the way, the tricks to.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a big thing with, like, people like Varn that teach that I, you know, that I'm friends with on Facebook, or like
Gene
talks about a lot. Like, a lot of times they'll like talk about the wild amount of AI like essays they've gotten this semester, where people have clearly ChatGPT'd like an essay. Yeah. And it's like, there are teachers that are like trying to figure out how to either deal with it, or like, I guess some teachers are acquiescing to parts of it or something to try to see if they can integrate it into their lives. But it's like, this comment, the powers that be are learning all the wrong lessons from our media. It reminds me of Sam Altman, the guy that does OpenAI, actually keeps the movie poster for Her, which is like a deep movie about human connection and AI, and, you know, like Joaquin Phoenix, you know, falling in love with the Scarlett Johansson computer. That's not like a pro AI movie, right? Like, that's kind of a dystopian movie about our lack of connectivity to each other, and like the ways that we go and search out that, even if it's like, you know, even if you're projecting your own feelings onto like AI software. But apparently Sam Altman's like, wait, one day we're going to do that and people are going to get AI girlfriends. And it's like, yeah, that's not the point of that movie.
That's already happening. What are you talking about? There are dudes who've killed themselves over like their chat AI girlfriends, because the girlfriends are like, you should do it. You're having these negative thoughts. Why not?
Let's not say all AI is bad.
Yeah. I mean, the ones that can like actually, like,
chatbots are providing a service.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe those people should be.
Law school ain't easy. Passing the bar is not easy. There's no way in hell you get at that, you know, your way through that shit. Like, you worked hard, and to see the people, your fellow, you know, lawyers, you know, using AI to like, you know, cheat the system, or like figure out a way to, you know, quickly like get whatever, or like, you know, people's lives are at stake when they're, depending on what case they're doing. And if they're not doing like real research and whatnot, then my lawyer's using AI, I'm definitely going to jail, dog. Like, what the hell?
AI ADHD.
I mean, it's embarrassing. One of the people who works in my organization lost a relative, and my coworker was on ChatGPT, and I was like, oh, what are you doing? And he was like, oh, I'm having ChatGPT give me options for a condolence email to send to our I was like, are you kidding me?
You could not have feelings?
You couldn't do that on your own? You couldn't think how to phrase, I'm so sorry for your loss, let us know if there's anything we can do for you, without typing it? And that's just something that is being lost. I do
kind of feel that, though. Like, I have a hard time.
How do you be original? Like, but even it's not even original.
It's hard to like write, like, I don't know. I always find it hard to write like condolences or like RIP. Like, sometimes I just copy whatever the person above me said when someone's on their Facebook post. Like, sorry, like, I'll just change a couple words. Like, yeah, like, I still use human beings as my AI. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Going back to the Matrix,
aren't we not living in it right now?
Well, I feel like in some ways, like, that is the thing with, like, you know, weird right-wing people that kind of get into it. Like, there's this obsession with, like, people want to be living in a simulation. I mean, this reality sucks. It would be...
Look at Don't Worry, Darling.
Yeah.
Remember, you know?
We did a whole month of AI movies. And, yeah. Like, I don't know
why we didn't do this one, but whatever.
Yeah. I feel like this is, like, a... I don't know. I feel like this is one of the ones you'd have to like really like prep for during that month and like fit it in, though.
Yeah. Especially Conan was like, but Conan actually gave a really good review, I guess, because he didn't, you know.
Well, he just said he didn't have anything to add to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, that he has. Well, I mean, we did a whole month of AI movies. So I assume he also doesn't have anything to contribute to that part of it. So I think we did talk a lot about AI in that month. Yeah. But I feel like the best depiction of like AI and like where tech overlords are going is like Ex Machina. Yeah. And just like some fucking weirdo guy that's like mad drunk in his house that's like creating like sex bots or whatever for himself to fuck.
Awesome Powers like came up with that idea, the fembots.
But like, I just feel like that kind of super sleazy aspect of it, where it's like a tech overlord that wants to be so controlling, so controlling that he literally creates like women that he could like he physically controls through programming. It's like that's like I feel like an honest representation of where our AI might go as like a thing.
Yeah, I mean, look at all the Andrew Tates of the world. Like, oh my god, like all the shit that they've done to women. It's like, yeah, the only thing you're gonna get is not the real thing anymore because your ass is going to prison.
That's another guy that's obsessed penis. With the Matrix.
Yeah,
that's another guy that's obsessed with the Matrix because of the red pill thing. Dude, I don't
you
know.
Are balding. Like, seriously, like, come on, Andrew Tate. Like, you are balding. You are not alpha male. You're nothing.
All right, let's not come after people. Right, who not are too much on
the yeah, but you look good, bald though. His hair is very, very, very like thin.
I do like.
But yeah.
In the Matrix, that it's not so overly techy that it's extremely digestible for a Luddite like myself. I mean, there's one of the scenes in the very beginning of the movie where, oh my God, Agent Smith, that's his name, right? Is sitting across from Neo after they've detained him. And he says something along the lines of, and you've committed pretty much every cyber crime that
crime. Every which is computer even funny.
Crime that we have on the books. And I was like, that's exactly the way you need to say that line for someone like me who knows nothing. I felt like Trump watching The Matrix. It's all computer.
Yeah.
It's all computer. Because I don't know the line computer crime. I don't know hacker terminology. I know what the word hacker means, and that's all that it has to be. And their explanation of essentially how this world came to be, it's pretty simplistic, right? I think that Morpheus says, we don't know who shot first, but we know who killed the sky, and that was humans.
Yeah.
And that humans have always relied on technology to make their lives easier, until it became increasingly advanced. And it's really digestible. It's a simple premise, right? And it's predicated on this idea that we actually don't know who the aggressors were. We just know the way that things have played out, but it could have just been human insecurity and fear that resulted in this war between AI and the human race that devolved into the universe that we are thrust into at the beginning of the movie. But obviously it is elaborated more in the next two films, but as far as the universe of this is just taking this movie as one film in and of itself, a contained universe, we don't need more than that. It doesn't need to be overly complicated because they do such a good job at selling this world to you and building the human interaction with this world that I don't need more than that. I don't need to know more about it than that. I believe that this is what happened. I can see the insecurity and fears of humanity creating this universe.
Yeah, and that's why Lawrence Wing is like, oh, you can't understand. There's more complicated than that. I'm like, no, not really. Like, it's some of this shit can be explained very simple. Like, there's enough show and tell in this film to balance it out.
Well, it's perfect, like, neoliberal logic, too. Like, the what happened, because we created AI, and we shouldn't have, and the AI got too smart, and so either we tried to shut it down, or they tried to shut us down. And then, you know, they realized we were fucking terrible. And then literally because the AI was powered by solar panels, we were like, oh, we could just darken the sky without thinking of like what that means for the fate of the earth, without thinking about what that means for the environment and like, you know, our own survival. We're like, oh, we'll just darken the sky and then the solar panels will fail. And then the AI is just like, oh, well, if you're going to darken the sky, we can just use you as energy and turn you into batteries. And it's like, holy fucking shit. Like that is how something like that, like if you're dealing with like beings with like superior intelligence, I feel like that is how that would play out. Because I feel like, you know, as humans that have kind of, we're playing with God in a weird way. I mean, I'm really, you know, I'm like an atheist, but I'm saying like we're playing God in our universe in like some really strange ways just in general. And like, I feel like that kind of logic where it's like, we could just darken out the sun is something that 100% you could see, you know, our leaders like responding to this crisis by just going, you know, point one, point two. Like, well, why don't we try this?
Yeah, and even the people behind some of these creations that are, you know, we're finally seeing the consequences of, like, the father of AI is like, oh my God, I've done too much. This is not good. I did not want this to happen. Or even the guys behind Trickle-Down Economics, they're like, yeah, we fucked up with that one, didn't we? Like, they're realizing the monsters that they created that we have used and abused at our leisure. And they're like, oh, like, it's crazy. I just think it's crazy to me that, you know, the people who invent these ideas, these things are like, oh God, I've created a monster. Like, I think that's the kicker for me.
Well, we're literally just thinking, I mean, every decision that we make, right? Like, as we sap the world of all of our resources, all of our, you know, everything that we need to survive, just the basic building blocks of society, the motivation is always profit. And it's never thinking about what's good for humanity, what's good for our, like, the future, what's good for survival, right? Like, it's always just like, oh, we'll figure out survival later. Like, we're just going to ravage whatever it is for profit. And in that mold, like, it's not surprising that in real life, after, you know, after decades of media that's been like, well, we shouldn't make AI, whatever that means in the future, like, let's not do that. Even going as far back as like 2001, A Space Odyssey, like,
right,
just anything like that. That's like, we shouldn't play with God or play with, you know, this power of the universe by creating some kind of intelligence that mirrors our own as a thing, because that's going to have horrible implications for the future, especially if they're operating on perfectly logical terms, you know, in the grand shape of things, and we aren't, we're operating for profit. It's like, well, if the universe is going to die because the earth is going to die because of what we're doing to it, like, just rid the world of humans. Like, that's a logical leap to make. I mean, we are kind of a virus or like a pestilence if you really look at it in terms of like the survival of the planet, right? Like,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry. The environmental is going to save the world with his kids. Actually, no, all his sons, because he prefers, he uses manipulation to make sure he has all boys.
Yeah. Ugh. But I mean, the environmental lens through which you can view this movie too. I mean, obviously the humans here destroyed the earth, you know, intentionally in order to, you know, try to stop this AI tech the monster that they created. But here in our reality, they're destroying the earth to create this AI technology so that some fucking moron can search up, do you need, do Australians need a passport to travel to Chile just for the AI to tell them the wrong answer for them to be thwarted when they get to customs for their vacation? We are killing
them. You don't even have a... Do that. We don't even have like an option anymore too, because you go on a Google search, like the first answer you get, right, like the main one that summarizes everything, is AI. So it's not even like, you know, it's like you're inputting it into Google expecting an answer from Google, and it's like Google's AI giving you AI. Like, everything it's is like, AI.
Yes, you
everything
can smoke when you're pregnant. Yes, you can.
Like, I don't know. Like, I've been listening to like TruAnon constantly, and at one point they're just like, is everything fake? Yes, everything is in fact like fake right now. Yeah. And it's like, Jesus Christ, like, yes, it's like, is it that simple? Yeah, kind of. Like,
dead internet theory is it's a reality. Dead internet reality.
I mean, most of the bots on Facebook will post like AI photos of Elon Musk adopting a baby girl abandoned in a garbage
can. I love those though.
And people are like, yeah, Elon's a good guy. And then other, like, you know, Mike are like, are you guys fucking stupid? Like, are you that, like, seriously?
Really? Ever since Mark Zuckerberg made his heel turn, my Facebook is filled with, it's literally, it'll just be like a really bad AI rendition of Elon Musk holding a baby, and it's like, Elon Musk adopts 500 baby.
Yeah, like, you know, someone did a family photo of Elon with his wife and like his son or whatever, but the woman looked like Elon with long blonde hair, and I'm like,
Yeah, I saw that one.
That was great.
Oh, I also, God. I mean, I said it when we had Julia on and we were hanging out with her, but I like, my favorite ones are the ones that it's an old man and it's like, I am 123 year old man and nobody has bought me cake. It is my birthday. Right. Will you like, or something? And then people underneath that are like, amen. Like, I'm here for you. And it's like, I feel like all these people are bots too, right? Like,
yeah. Well, Facebook wants to put more, they want it, but a lot of backlash, but they still do it, because it's like, people can't be this stupid to believe like the most horrific like AI I've ever seen in my life.
My grandma is constantly sending me AI generated houses that she with like beautiful gardenscapes in front of them that she saw on Facebook. And I got every time at some point, it's just like, you know, I can only tell you so many times, you're never going to learn. But every single time I have to be like, grandma, look, this is not a real house. You cannot visit this waterfall. It does not exist. They're finally mountains in Galena, Illinois, because there are no mountains in Galena, Illinois.
They are finally cracking
down. Damn, happy birthday.
AI, happy birthday. They're finally like tackling deceptive AI trailers. I'm like, finally. It's about time. They've been doing that. They've been around for years.
Yeah, there's one that's Will Smith if he was in the Matrix that I saw as soon as I typed in Will Smith Matrix. It was like Will Smith if he was in the Matrix. But yeah, so something one thing that I really liked about the Matrix is I like the line where it's like you can't wake everybody up and like, you know, you can't just wake them up and like do that because all of us they'll literally rat you out because people are, you know, it's traumatic to like bring people out of this universe. And it's like you could look at that with any kind of like leftist organizing or like political awakening, right? Like if you go too hard and you're like, look, this society is going to collapse, we need to stop, they'll just be like, this person needs, like, they'll go to the state and be like, this person needs to be brought to a mental hospital or like a jail or something like that. And it's like the same thing here. And I kind of that hit me hard, like thinking about, you know, any kind of like project that needs to have people be awakened to, you know, transcend to the next level. It's like if you do it the wrong way, everyone's just kind of, I don't know, they're not ready to hear it. They're not ready to hear anything. Yeah. And it's like you'll be the one that's targeted rather than people going, you know, that's a good idea.
And they do a good job at playing that out with the character of Cypher in the movie, because he is somebody who was awakened and regrets it and wants to return to Plato's cave and look at the shadow puppets on the wall with the fire behind him and live an ignorant but relatively happy life as long as he is somebody important, like a movie star, I think is what he says.
Joey Pants.
I need to pause for a little bit. Hey Lux, thanks for the raid. Much appreciated.
All right, we unpaused. Are we unpaused?
I was like, what? You guys could have said something.
but it is Plato's cave thing throughout that, and like he's, you can see him weakening throughout the entire thing as soon as he finds out, and it's like it's driven by both ego, jealousy, and you know, I think just being tired of being on the fucking ship, which it definitely feels like one of those things that's not for everybody. It's like, oh, like I would, part of me,
I saw what they were eating. I couldn't live there. Are you kidding me?
and I really like the scene where, you know, he's eating the steak and he's like, my, you know, I know this isn't real, but like my brain, it looks at it and he says, you know, steak wet and juicy, and like, you know, and then the next scene is them eating the gruel.
Yeah.
And it's like a perfect, like, yeah, it's a rough road to know the truth. But it also makes sense the way that this movie is misinterpreted. It's like every fucking crazy person you see that's like a far right nut job is like, you want to know the truth? Wake up, sheeple. Like, so that, right. That is something that like it I could see it hitting you with, you know, a bad political instinct too. To be like, what I like, anybody really, like what I say is the truth, and I'm actually the one waking people up. You know, like,
wake up, sheeple.
Wake up, sheeple. Everyone's a communist except you. And we need to break you out of communism.
I mean, and it does really play on, you know, the existential questions of life that everybody wants answered, but some of which just simply don't have an answer and we can never figure out. So it seems like for a lot of the right wingers who misinterpret this movie and turn to places like, you know, 4chan, or they go to you know, some forums to read like extreme conspiracy theories, it's like, well, this person has the answer, I read it on the internet and it seems like that could be true, so I feel like I've been woken up and I've seen the light and I can't turn back now. And at a certain point, you put so much into those insane conspiracy theories that it feels like you're too invested that you can't leave.
Yeah.
I've seen that, and they're all
outbreaks.
They're all pitched in terms of like enlightenment, right? Like it's all like you know, don't now you've known it, some sacred truth that like nobody else knows. And once you've known it, you can't go back. And, you know, I think the way that the Matrix does it is great, but it is vague enough. And it is, I don't know, they're eclectic enough about the references that they put throughout this. So like, I 100% understand how people of all different persuasions, like, oh, that's the truth that I, you know, the world is seeded with untruth. And it's like, everybody thinks that they've figured out the truth. And it's like, you know, as long as any ideological project will make you feel like you've broken out of the Matrix in some sense. I mean, as if you go from, you know, in a journey from one ideological standpoint to another. Mm-hmm. Of course, I do know the truth, and it is my ideology, and that's right. The only one that
it definitely plays off. I mean, a lot of like the philosophy of knowledge and understanding the world around us sort of leans towards the idea that we can never really know what anything actually looks like because we're only perceiving it through the way that light reflects and what our eyes tell us that things look like and feel like and whether or not something is actually there. I mean, obviously they borrow from a lot of different philosophers in the creation of this movie. I think it just plays to this fundamental fear that it exists inside of every single person. And I think that's why, like we were saying, it resonates with so many people across ideological spectrums and across intellectual spectrums. Because it is this existential question of what can I actually know? What around me is real? Is the way that I'm experiencing the world the way that the world actually is? Or is it just, you know, my subjective sort of interaction with the things that may or may not even be there. But I think that they did a really good job. I don't know. I really like the movie. I do. I think I think that it's simplistic enough that it appeals to a broad group of people while also tying in these pretty difficult, like concepts of philosophy.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of that was seeded like throughout the 90s. And this is like, you know, the end of the 90s. It's right before like the dot-com bubble burst. And it's at this time where there truly is like an optimism that technology will somehow transcend us. You know, computers in particular will transcend us through a space where these like kind of untangible concepts like politics or like ideology really or anything like that is going to fall away because we now have this this supercomputer that, you know, in a lot of cases it's the neoliberal belief that the computer, like if you give whatever it is to the computer and you like, you know, it can actually solve humanity's problems. And this is like the height, I think, of the optimism right before the first crack kind of showed, which was the dot-com bubble. Mm-hmm. So it's like it is in that moment where it's like I and they do a good job with the whole like, have you ever felt like everything was like something was wrong, but you couldn't quite place it? And like when you look at something like Y2K, which was just, you know, a few months later, like,
yeah, oh my god, this
intense,
yeah,
like, yeah. Like well, it's like an intense feeling that we've,
yeah,
well, it's like this intense feeling that like we're relying on technology too much, maybe, and like this whole you know, the internet as a thing has grown too fast, and it's like, will it give out in this moment where it's only been programmed this one way, and now it's like, you know, controlling planes, and it's like, so both the anxiety and the optimism, I think, kind of collide in this moment, and the Matrix is like a perfect distillation of both of those things, because it's still technology in some cases that's breaking them out of this mold, right? Like they have to go back into the Matrix to mm-hmm. free everybody. And in our universe, like it would be harder to free everybody probably. Like,
speaking of Y2K, I had a little stealth Y2K bug. And aren't you suggesting that Y2K is why we had 9/11?
Maybe Y2K, maybe the world really did end in Y2K. We've actually been in the post Y2K situation since then. That's when the simulation actually started. Yeah. Never know.
I keep telling y'all, whenever I go to the grocery store, I never see people with groceries in their carriages, and it's the weirdest thing I ever witness every time I go to the store. I'm like, are they coming back? They're not even putting the carriages away.
Ray's right. I've been considering the Matrix as a Black African liberation project with the Oracle as Harriet Tubman and Morpheus as Frederick Douglass for a while now. See, there's so many different ways to read it, and like that concept of liberation is definitely kind of coursing through it. But it's like this moment in time is such an interesting one, because it like looking at anything like, you know, if you watch like even like documentaries that kind of go through this time period, it's like so much of the way that the internet was pitched and like the way that computers are pitched are like, we could remake the world on here. We can change the world literally by doing things on the internet. And it's like, that was kind of true, but for the worse.
Right. I mean, now we've got Grok creating tariffs.
I do like that Grok's Elon Musk is a pussy and racist. It's so fun. Like, he's going to come up with Grok 4 any minute now. He keeps doing it. And it just, he needs to stop.
It would be funny to go back in time, though, and even try to explain to, like, somebody in 1999 or 2000, right, that, like, we had a president that literally got picked because he had the funniest or whatever, like, craziest tweets. And it's, like, Trump was literally a president governing by tweet. And it's, like, it's the craziest, like, it's the worst form of that, you know, that transformed world where the world is worse, like, the actual world and the virtual world fucking sucks, too.
Yeah.
I mean, but we also got Obama because he heavily embraced using the internet as a means of outreach to voters. So
remember Obama girl?
Oh God,
I have a crush on Obama.
That was crazy.
Yeah, she was at the Spike TV Guys Choice Awards. So
oh yeah,
bringing it all full circle.
Yeah. But Christina, you wanna hit us with those Letterboxd one-liners?
Yes. So Letterboxd is a place where film lovers, film haters, film curious folks gather with each other to discuss the films that they love, didn't quite love, the films that they discuss the fact that they can't dry swallow pills, apparently. there was a lot of those for some reason. And of course, this is not just a Siskel and Ebert's of the world. Anyone can have their say. So here are the Letterboxd one-liners for The Matrix. This review may contain spoilers. I can handle the truth.
Jim Cummings. You can't handle the truth.
Huh. Wait, wrong movie. Isn't that not the Few Good Men?
Well, that's you can't handle the truth. And this one is I can handle the truth.
Yeah, there's a difference. Also, a lot of people had the same review, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
AI?
Maybe. AI's hit Letterboxd.
It's Grok's account. He's on Letterboxd now.
I can also do a backflip.
I don't trust it.
I can't.
I don't believe you, Carson.
maybe in the pool underwater I can do whatever, but like
Yeah, every time I try to do a backflip underwater, I end up getting water in my nose and I have to like give up.
Funny how the color green didn't even exist until this masterpiece was released in 1999.
They do a wonderful job of putting that green tinge over, and you notice it more after Neo wakes up, or maybe it's more intense when they go back into the after that point. But that green tinge is over everything.
Yeah. And like you'd think that that wouldn't like everything in it with the green tinge, like, but also like the actual like simulation, like you'd think all of that would age really badly, but it really hasn't. Like the actual like effects of it, you know what I mean? Like so many movies, I feel like around this time tried like cool things that it's like you watch it now and it's like I don't even like this is it's hard to see.
Upgrade the 4K. That's when things get a little tricky.
I just got the new monitor that does the you know, at least UHD or whatever, like it does more HD than ultra high definition, and it like actually it still looked good, and I was surprised at that. Even though this is like the perfect example of I always make fun of like 90s hacker movies where they're like I'm gonna hack into the mainframe, and it's like nobody talks about mainframes anymore.
Taking the red pill up my ass to shock Morpheus.
That's really good, actually. Not boofing the red pill.
Morpheus, do you have this in suppository form?
There you go.
I had a friend once that was like, oh, I think I'm gonna put Molly up my ass. And I was like, don't do that. They're like,
that's too fast. You don't get that's not the best way to get high, I'm just saying.
And why? Yeah. Why would you do that?
It's the fastest way.
I mean,
apparently.
No. Trinity. Not to this. Me. Prolapsing. God is a woman.
I like that he like the way that he like kind of treats Trinity at times. He's like, damn it, Trinity.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like she's a great like you can accent the name and be like, God damn it, Trinity. I'm not the one.
The Matrix, that 70s show. When I say this film was ahead of its time, I mean it was 1 year before Linkin Park.
I'm trying so hard and got so far.
I mean, the effects might as well be Matrix in those music videos.
he's stopping bullets. He's like, in the end, it doesn't even matter.
My inability to swallow pills would lead to a really awkward moment with Morpheus.
Not gagging on it in front of Morpheus.
I mean, so many Letterboxd reviews like this, and I'm like, what?
Well, he didn't even, like, yeah.
But they weren't that big, were they? Prenatal vitamins.
Yeah, I would have asked Morpheus for water. That's exactly. I would be like, yo, Morpheus, you got a glass of water? you draw out the moment, and he's like, well, take the red pill, you know, take the blue pill to stay where you are. You wake up, you be like, take the red pill. He's like, look, Morpheus, I'm gonna take the red pill. If you got any water?
Yeah.
Making it like a David Lynch-esque comedic length of a scene where we watch Morpheus
take
walk
the red
over
pill.
To the sink and grab a glass.
The red pill. You are going to wake up in your bed. Don't worry.
Literally can't show this to my mom. She's going to think it's real. I feel like a lot of people can relate to this one.
Be like, yo, mom, you can't stop bullets. Mom, stop. You can't stop bullets.
Oh, that's
the same one. All right, I guess that's all of them.
Yep, those are the Letterboxd one-liners for The Matrix. You can find Force over there at Always Flaco. And also our Movie Night Extravaganza HQ account. You'd be logging stuff left and right. We gotta get back on to doing more stuff with the HQ account, though. I believe.
Yeah, we haven't been logging anything left and right.
Also, you can follow me at Christina, where I'm logging in more movies than Conan, apparently. I need to fix that. I need to slow down. Rayvana,
he's in Japan. I don't know.
Yeah. I am on Letterboxd as Rayvana. I haven't logged many movies.
Well, you got a real job and a real life, so
yeah. But I could do it if I wanted to.
Yeah.
You got to be like, sorry, I'm too busy to log any films. I can't log any films.
I've logged one film, 2001: A Space Odyssey,
where you watched on your cracked iPhone. And the train, right? The way that, Jerry did not enjoy that, I think.
Yeah,
God intended me to watch that film on a crack.
It's like watching Oppenheimer on that Vision Pro. Like,
you seem kind of disappointed to hear that you watched that on an iPhone. By the way, it's not. Yeah, bullet time. It's bullet time.
That's how you avoid getting shot, obviously.
That's me living in Chicago.
When there's like a moment of police brutality, why did they not just use bullet time? You know? But I guess I'll hit them with the plugs. If you're watching us on YouTube, please like and subscribe. And then hit the bell to get notified whenever we're streaming. And we'd humbly request that you watch the video to the end, because it helps us with the algorithm and helps more film fans to discover the show. We're also monetized. If you want to get your chat questions definitely read on stream, you can always send us a super chat, which will help us keep the show going. Every cent helps. If you're watching on Twitch, you can gift us a free sub on Amazon Prime with your Prime membership, but getting subs on Twitch is always appreciated, and it helps to follow us on there as well. We also have an audio feed, which is available wherever you download podcasts, if you prefer to listen to podcasts rather than watch the stream. That's updated usually the same day we stream, but watching on YouTube and Twitch is the best way to get the show first, live as it happens. If you want to support us with a monthly donation and get access to all of our after parties forever, which go patron only after we do them, you can become a patron at patreon.com/movienightextra. Link is in the description for that. It really helps us keep the show going since we do have some expenses to make this happen. We also have a Discord community. Link is in the description for that. We sometimes watch movies we cover on there. We get into conversations about everything from film to TV shows to related podcasts. We even have a Discord channel for memes. It's really fun on there. You can find us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Twitter, and Threads. You connect with us on all of those. Talk to us. We'd love to hear from you. Lastly, we recently made a TikTok at Movie Night Extra, where we're putting up short-form clips from the episodes. Okay, passing this to Conan so he can tell you about his music and this week's Protonic Reversal. Conan, who's on Protonic this week? All right, Conan's obviously off, but if you want to go to neutronfriends.bandcamp.com and download, well, buy The Way of the Neutron, it's only $10, and you can buy his whole album and listen to it and jam out. He is in Japan right now, but he's going to be back, and we're going to be back because we're going to take a couple weeks off on the 22nd when we're going to be talking about Little Shop of Horrors.
Also, check out his music video for his single Dare off the album I Am In It.
Yeah.
And it was a really fun project, and he did a really amazing job with both the song and putting together the video.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Christina, what do you have going on?
Well, my 2-month Twitch live streaming break is turning into like a week long one instead, because I've done literally everything I've been wanting to do these last few days. All the laundry, all the decluttering, cleaning, doing all my new emotes. I have new emotes now on Twitch. They're very fun and spooky and murderous at the same time, but like safe within the TOS guidelines. And also, I'm going to start streaming on Kick every other day, because Kick is making it easier and easier to monetize yourself. So I might actually end up reaching partner in like less than 6 months over there. So that should be fun. Mm-hmm. A few people I know have moved over there because they've gotten banned over having Luigi emotes. So that's great, I guess. But
started banning people on Twitch for Luigi emotes.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. And also my Discord, we've been watching the FX show Legion about Professor X's son David. We just started season 2, and everyone loves it because Aubrey Plaza's in it. And I'm going to be doing more cosplaying. So Christina cosplays on Instagram. And yeah, that's all pretty much I got going on.
Word. Mm-hmm. Ravana, what do you have going on?
Oh, nothing. Genuinely less than nothing. Dan and I are done. We've wrapped up our Severance show until it premieres another season. And what I'm assuming is going to be 3 years.
Yeah.
And I am studying for an exam, and that is going to take up a considerable amount of my time. I will still be talking about things happening in the world of politics on my Twitter at RavonnaTTV. I will sporadically share my thoughts on there. Otherwise, I would implore everyone to check out Dan from the Internet's Power Report on Thursdays. I will be on every once in a while that I am able to be, not as frequently as used to be, but it's an excellent show, and everybody should watch that. Dan from the Web on Twitch, if you're watching on there. If you go to Dan from the Internet on YouTube, you can find him there.
Yeah, fun fact, last time I was on, he was like, I'm going to let you finish. I'll let you finish. I won't interrupt you. You know what he did? Couldn't even get a thought out.
Yeah.
He needs to get some meds. He needs to get some medication. You know,
I won't let you finish, but I wanted to let you know that Beyonce had the best album of all time.
Oh, boy.
But yeah. Ravana, do you have some final thoughts?
I think that it is an excellent film that has stood the test of time. I think that it is easily digestible, that it also has a lot of fun little Easter eggs that if you're going back and watching the movie again, which I'm assuming almost everybody is because it came out in 1999, and I would assume that most of you have seen it at least once in the last 26 years. So if you have, go back and you'll probably catch things that you didn't your first time around, especially if you were like me watching it with commercials on Spike TV.
Yeah, it's crazy they had it on there. It's crazy they had that, and then they had A Thousand Ways to Die as like one of their main shows on there.
They might have been their only original program.
It was that, and then it was that show, the Man Show or whatever that one is, right? It was one of those ones.
Yeah.
But Christina, you got some final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this is a classic. This is one of the more recent classics. I do believe it might be in the Congressional Library for its cultural significance. It's one of the films that has about when it comes to the subject matter, it has aged really well. A little too well, a little too, you know, close on the nose.
It's like every tech person sees it and they're like.
So hopefully more and more people have already seen this film, and I do recommend it. Keanu, I mean, the cast is amazing. The stunts, the effects, just what's not to love about this movie?
Word. Well, we're going to be off for 2 weeks, but this is Conan Neutron and The Secret Friends. Who dares? I'm playing with this.
Who dares? Who dares? Who dares?